back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20.
Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Climbs the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes, Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. It is good to be back at the facility. Good to be chatting with you on the phones as well as online over the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat, and you can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So let's start with some news and notes, and then we will immediately open up the lines. The preseason schedule is out. So those of you itching for football, dying to circle some dates on your calendar, get set. Now, all of the dates have not been finalized, and the regular season schedule will be released later this month. But here's what we know with respect to the Giants' preseason schedule. They are going to play the same four teams that they played last preseason. They do have one additional game. They are taking part in the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, when the Giants play the Bills. That'll be Sunday night, August 3rd. And the other date we know for sure, they'll host the Patriots on Thursday, August 28th. It's the other games in between that right now is up in the air. But the opponents will be the Steelers at MetLife Stadium, and then they will visit the Colts and the Jets. Now, the Jets game will clearly also be at MetLife Stadium, except the one technicality will be the Giants will be considered the road team this season since they were the home team last year. So that rivalry will be renewed. So it means we are itching and getting closer to the start of the 2014 season. So that is the news that was released on Wednesday. In terms of free agency news, nothing new to report. Clearly the Giants have been extremely busy this offseason. They have beefed up the roster. They have altered the roster. It's almost as if you need to study up on the team right now because there's not too many familiar faces. And that was a necessary move on the part of the Giants because clearly they had some major needs coming off of last season, and they addressed a lot of those needs. And some of the moves were made to not just appease to the fan base, but because of these players are going to come in and expected to make some necessary changes to the defense and the offense. And I think the one thing that you could say, at least on paper, is there's a great deal of depth on both sides of the football. Do they still have work to do through the draft? Absolutely. The tight end position is one area, I think, where they still need some stability and substance, because there's question marks surrounding Adrian Robinson, considering his lack of health and what Kellen Davis can bring to the table, the latest free agent that they added. And you also want to make sure that you can continue to bring in youth, because there's still plenty of veterans on this team, and the Giants need to think about the future, because what has happened the last few seasons has been that the veterans that they've been relying on have been plagued by injuries, and sometimes you don't have strong enough young guys that you could turn to in a pinch. And I think that that's the goal, at least coming into the draft. They're going to have a number of draft picks, and there's going to be plenty of depth out there, specifically in the offensive line. You know, this is a draft where you have a number of offensive linemen I think that you can go after, and there's even depth at the wide receiver spot. Running backs, you know, based on following the league time and time again, you could grab a productive running back in the later rounds. You don't necessarily have to reach for somebody in round one. And I think the best example is Alfred Morris of the Washington Redskins, who was a late-round pick, and look at what he's done in the Redskins system. He's thrived, and he's arguably one of the top running backs in the game right now. So, you know, that is a direction that they can certainly look to go in, but it's not something that they need to say, hey, we can use an additional running back, so we've got to take it in rounds one and rounds two. I think you can find a productive guy in rounds five and round six. So that's pretty much where the Giants stand right now. Obviously, we are inching closer to the draft. May is around the corner. If they stuck to their usual schedule, we would have been running through the draft board as we speak. But that is not the case. The NFL wanted activities each and every month. And there will be some OTAs and mini camps starting up across the league this month. And then you'll have the draft on May. 888-8B. You know, every time I come in, you know, this is a thing, and I'm laughing at Dan, who helps us out here on the show. I always mix up my SiriusXM number with my Giants number, so I've got to throw that telephone number out the window and get back to work here. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number here. 201-939-4513. Twitter, hashtag Giants chat, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We'll get to a majority of your tweets throughout the program as well. Right now, let's focus on the lines. And to get us going here on a Thursday, Giants.com, it is Christian on Long Island. Christian, what's happening?
How are you doing?
Doing well, Christian. How's everything with you? What you got?
I'm all right. I just wanted to get your idea. Two questions. One on a little mock draft I did, and then two, the remaining, I know they haven't really made cuts for free agency yet, but what are some options that you think that we can go as far as after they make some cuts, maybe some value picks we can get? As far as the mock draft, I got Aaron Donald in the first, which would be a dream, which seems unlikely since he's rising up draft charts. Antonio Richardson in the second. Seferian Jenkins in the third. I really like Telvin Smith. I think he'll be in there in the fourth, but I know we need a wide receiver, so 4B was Brandon Coleman. We still need a center, so Brian Stork in the fifth. 5B, Jordan Tripp, and C-Strunk in the sixth.
Well, I mean, it's very interesting here that you laid out the entire draft. So, I mean, you really have it down in terms of dotting your I's and crossing your T's. You know, right now it's all speculation in terms of where guys are going to fall. I think the better gauge is to see where the run on positions is going to go in that first round. And based on what we've seen over the course of free agency, the Texans right now I still think are in need of a quarterback based on the fact that Matt Schaub is gone. So I think you could pencil in a quarterback there. The Rams I think are going to try to move that number two overall pick because they have a great deal of depth in terms of their draft picks, and they have playmakers on defense, and they also have an anchor at left tackle in Jake Long, who they signed from the Miami Dolphins. You know, after that, it's where, you know, maybe things could get interesting. The Jaguars could go in a variety of spots. The Browns, you can make the argument, are in need of a quarterback. But right now, we don't know what's going to happen with Alex Mack. The latest news is that the Browns may match what the Jaguars are going to offer him, or they may let him walk. And the Raiders, to me, brought in Matt Schaub, so I don't think they're a lock to go for quarterback. So, you know, the more and more questions that continue to come to the surface, I think that's good for the Giants because I think you could see some players perhaps dip that we never anticipated. Because, you know, a lot of people, for example, anticipated that Robinson, the top offensive lineman out of Auburn, is going to go maybe with that first pick, and we don't know now. I think he may fall considering that there's other positions of need. But in terms of Aaron Donald perhaps going to the Giants at number 12 that you have penciled in, you know, I think it really depends on what run on the position we see early on. That's what it's really going to come down to.
Thank you. And I just maybe just a quick idea on what you think we might do or try to attack in the rest of free agency.
Well, it's really down to the nitty-gritty at this point. I think that the Giants are going to do probably the majority of their heavy lifting through the draft right now, considering that they utilized a great deal of their cap space on multiple free agents. And, you know, there's not a great deal of playmakers that are out there. In terms of tight ends, for example, JerMichael Finley's name is always going to be thrown around because he's at least a name, but there's still question marks regarding his health and whether or not he is going to be able to get through an entire season. I think JerMichael Finley is the type of guy that is going to play it out, wait and see how teams fill their voids through the draft, and then it will determine what type of team is probably a good fit for him. There's always going to be ties to the Giants because of the fact that Ben McAdoo was with the Packers, their new offensive coordinator. You know, that would be one guy who I think you could at least experiment if he's healthy enough and you still need a playmaker at tight end. You know, outside of that, the majority of the running backs are off the market at this point. Wide receiver, I think you got to go young at this point. I really don't see a playmaker out there on the market. And as far as the offensive line is concerned, once again, that would be another area where I think you want to go young as opposed to bringing in another veteran. They've already brought in a handful of veterans. Eventually, you need to say, hey, we've got to go in the direction of youth.
I agree. Definitely need to infuse some youth in there. One last question. I know we don't usually spend a lot in free agency, but obviously we bucked that trend this offseason. Could you see us moving up or moving down? Obviously moving down if who we want is not available, but could you see us moving up for a player in this draft?
I don't see the Giants moving up, Christian. If anything, I see them moving down. You have to understand, it's not really the Giants' MO to make these big surprising trades where they're willing to sacrifice picks just to maybe move up a few spots. I think you could get great value at number 12 in this year's draft, so I don't think there's a necessity to sacrifice a late-round pick. And keep in mind, as you know, Jerry Reese, some of his late-round picks haven't panned out. If anything, this is not the year to all of a sudden get rid of those late-round picks. This is a year to maybe make up for some of the previous year draft picks that didn't necessarily prove to be capable guys.
All right. Want to say thank you for your time.
Not a problem, Christian. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. At Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Ted Crum writes in, Texans not picking a quarterback at one. No one is that good. They pick Clowney, plus they have Fitzpatrick. They did bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, the former Bill, the pride of Harvard. And Clowney, to me, would be the smart move for the Texans because you can line him up opposite J.J. Watt. And it's very rare that you can get two top-notch defensive linemen who have a knack to get to the quarterback. So if I'm Houston, that would be the direction that I would go in. But like I said, St. Louis, I could see shipping that number two overall pick because remember, they're reaping the rewards from the RG3 move. Jacksonville, let's see, if they get Alex Mack. Alex Mack was given the designated tag by the Cleveland Browns, which means Cleveland, if they lose him, they don't get anything in return. That's how it differentiates from the franchise tag. So if they get an anchor at center, and the Jacksonville Jaguars have already done a great job beefing up their offensive line, they brought over Pro Bowler Zane Beatles from the Broncos. So I don't know if offensive line is that position that they're going to turn to, which means all of a sudden this Greg Robinson pick is starting to fall as a result of the teams that you thought were going to target him no longer maybe need an offensive lineman. Then you go to Cleveland. Cleveland's the wild card. If they lose Alex Mack, okay, maybe they need an offensive lineman. I wouldn't take a center with that fourth overall pick. And they clearly need a quarterback because Brian Hoyer is really the only playmaker on their roster. Then you go to Oakland. They brought in Matt Schaub. Oakland lost some offensive linemen over the course of free agency. I could see them perhaps going after a Robinson to complement some of the veterans that they brought in. Atlanta, that's a team that can use some offensive line help, even though they brought in John Asamoah from the Kansas City Chiefs. Tampa Bay, Bucs are a type of team. They could certainly go in a variety of different directions. Tampa Bay just shipped out Mike Williams, one of their top wideouts, to the Buffalo Bills. Sammy Watkins falls, which I would doubt, but let's say hypothetically, you know, that to me would be a good fit. The Vikings, I don't think they're going to grab a quarterback with that early pick. I think that they're going to just try to play things out with Ponder and Matt Castle. If anything, you go for a quarterback later on. Buffalo's the type of team that could use some offensive line help. You know, so we're getting closer and closer to the Giants. I don't think it's as predictable as it was perhaps a few months ago, considering we've seen some movement on the free agent market, and there's been some trades over the last few weeks. So to me, that's really shaking things up. Let's head back to the lines. Timothy is in New Jersey. Timothy, what's happening?
Nothing. I got a question for the Giants. Before the draft, the Giants, so cap space, the Giants try to acquire Larry Fitzgerald from the Cardinals for 2014 first, a fourth-round pick and a 2015 conditional first-round pick. It would be a wrong move.
Well, I appreciate the phone call, Timothy, and I love Timothy's phone calls because he always sets up these hypothetical, convoluted trades. I love the creativity. It always keeps me entertained on a morning here at Giants.com. I don't think they have the cap space flexibility to absorb a Larry Fitzgerald contract, and why would you want to eat up the majority of your cap space and sacrifice other players just to bring in a guy that, yes, is extremely talented, but remember, one position, one player is not going to be the difference maker in terms of missing or making the playoffs. And the Giants should know that based on what they went through last season when you had a banged up offensive line and all of a sudden everyone struggled as a result. So you could bring in the most talented wide receiving core that you can name and think about. Bottom line is if these guys can't block for those wide receivers and everybody doesn't stay healthy, makes no difference. To me, I think it's smarter to spread the wealth with your cap space and address all areas of need as opposed to make that one big splash with one position. So I don't think that the Giants right now are in the position, based on how aggressive they were in free agency, to say, hey, let's sacrifice a few draft picks so that we can bring in a name wide receiver. They're in the business and they're in the position, based on the trends we've seen over the course of the offseason, where I think they're committed to developing a Reuben Randle, seeing what he can bring to the table, bringing in a guy that knows the system, and I know the offense is going to change in Mario Manningham. You know, they're comfortable. And the Giants have had success in years past where they don't necessarily need a Pro Bowl-esque type of wide receiver. You know, you have Victor Cruz. To me, last year, it was health that hurt the receiving core. It wasn't so much the lack of talent. The bottom line was it was Victor Cruz more often than not. And there was really not a great deal of reliability from the other guys. Akeem Nicks, we know, had his fair share of ups and downs. You know, Randle, it was still the learning curve of a young wide receiver. Lewis Murphy didn't pan out. You know, we could sit here and rehash all that the receiving core brought to the table. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Derek in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance.
How we doing, Derek? What you got?
I'm good. I was actually going to talk about the offense and wanted to get your opinion on how broke you think the offense is. It's been highly, you know, recognized that the offensive line was the cause of most of the issues. I talked to John earlier this week and basically said that if we address the running back position, which we have, we fix the offensive line, I don't think you need to throw out the baby with the bathwater on this and kind of go crazy with the offense. Wanted to get your opinion on that, and I had a question about the draft.
Well, I agree with you. I think that they did address some of their needs on offense. So, you know, when you get to 12, I don't think right now, maybe compared to how I looked at things a few weeks ago, they need to go out of their way to reach for an offensive lineman. For example, I think there's a great deal of depth in this year's draft, so you could get a quality offensive lineman in round 2 and round 3. I think the smart thing, based on all of the areas that they addressed in the offseason, is to really, and I know it's the old cliche, but I would look at your draft board and you take the best available talent with that 12th overall pick. Because right now, you could say tight end is the most glaring need on paper, but once again, I'm not a fan of reaching for a guy unless you know that he's a two-way tight end. And, you know, Eric Ebron has been the popular name that's been thrown out, the North Carolina tight end. He still has question marks next to him. You know, there's no guarantee he's going to come in and he's going to be able to establish his presence at the line of scrimmage and be able to block. And I don't care if Ben McAdoo's the offensive coordinator or Kevin Kilbride's the offensive coordinator. They're not going to all of a sudden shed the philosophy that the tight end doesn't have to block anymore. Ben McAdoo came from a Packers system where they relied on those Packers tight ends to block. So it's not as if they're all of a sudden going to get away from the principles that have been the things that they have followed here within the organization. So in terms of the direction you go in the draft, I don't think you need to make a big splash, and I don't think you need to say, okay, tight end is our need. We have to take a tight end at 12. I think right now the Giants are in a position, based on how aggressive they were in the offseason, that you take the best playmaker and the best guy that's going to come in and have an immediate impact. Because with my number one pick, I don't want to have a guy that's going to be a project. I want to have a guy, Derek, that's going to come in, and with a small group of days in training camp, he's already going to be able to digest the system, and with confidence, you can slide him in.
Well, that's basically what I was talking to John about. That Ebron, if you bring him in, let's not try to make him an inline blocker, you know, and try to have him do things that he's not going to be able to do. And I think that the Giants offense, once we identified that, you know, we get back to fixing the things that we were top offense not too long ago. So I don't think we're top offense anymore right now, but I don't think we are as broken as people think we are broken. And I think if we go and we address the offense in the second and third round, maybe of the offense of the draft, I think we're like a Davante Adams, and maybe a Trey Mason in the third or fourth, I think we're looking okay. And I want to know, before I leave, the Lions are rumored to move up and take Sammy Watkins.
Correct. I did hear that rumor.
I wonder, what do you think that how that would affect the Giants if they do that?
I don't really think it's going to affect them greatly. First of all, the Lions right now are locked into the 10 spot, so they're going to pick in front of the Giants to begin with. And I don't think the Giants are saying to themselves right now, Sammy Watkins is going to fall to them at 12. So if the Lions move up...
No, I don't think they're going to fall there, but who's that? If they move up and get Sammy Watkins, that means the team will fall back. That's on the top of the draft. They can come back and probably pick a quarterback, one of the top teams that are looking for a quarterback. And so you might get an additional quarterback. So someone might fall into their lap. Right now I'm projecting that Giants get Donald, but, you know, I don't know whether one of the Matthews or another Evans may fall because of that.
Well, if Matthews falls to them, that would be a gift. One of the best offensive linemen out there in the draft. In terms of Mike Evans, the wide receiver from Texas A&M, you know, he's not necessarily the top wide receiver because Sammy Watkins is. If Evans is there, I'm sure the Giants are going to experiment. But once again, you know, you have to have confidence that Evans is going to come in and he's going to be able to digest the offense, and he's going to be able to become a playmaker. Because even though they have some depth at wide receiver, I think if you draft a guy at 12 as a wide receiver, you're expecting him to be that playmaker starting in week one. You're not expecting him to all of a sudden, you know, fall down on the depth chart. Because keep in mind, what did John Mara say? And appreciate the phone call, Derek. Thanks so much for weighing in. John Mara, one of the things he said in his postseason press conference was, why did it take so long for Jarrell Jernigan to get to this point? So if the Giants go in the direction of drafting a wide receiver, do you really think they're going to have this guy come in and play, you know, a few plays over the course of a game or over the course of a season? No, they're going to want this guy to spread his wings immediately. So if you take Mike Evans, you need to have confidence that he's going to come in and he's going to deliver. He performed very good at his pro day. It was the same pro day where all eyes were on Johnny Manziel, and Evans did haul in a great deal of his passes, and he showed the physique that you need to be a top-line wide receiver. And I think he proved that over the course of his collegiate career. But time will tell whether or not they can transfer and translate to the NFL. I think to sum it up, and Derek touched on this, let's say there is movement where the Lions grab Sammy Watkins. You want to speculate, okay, so somebody moves down and they decide they want to take a quarterback. All that's going to do is it's going to allow the Giants to probably grab a player that maybe they didn't anticipate being around at number 12. Because you know the Giants are not going after a quarterback, and the Giants are not expecting to get Sammy Watkins. So if you eliminate all of those guys off the board, it doesn't harm the Giants because the Giants, once again, are not banking on that position or that player. So I don't really think it's going to spice things up or change and alter the approach that the Giants had, let's say, a week or two leading up to the draft. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's check in on Twitter before we head back to the lines. I know a number of you are weighing in. Debbie Webb chiming in. We need to get a playmaker on offense, Ebron or Evans. Draft is deep on all positions. Tight end, the fallout is big after Ebron. It does fall off. I'll agree with you to that standpoint. Ebron, to me, has separated himself from the rest of the pack. But once again, if you're going to go after Ebron, you better be fully confident that he is going to be able to block. Because what were Giants fans complaining about all of last season? They brought in a veteran who was really not asked to block in his previous stint in Oakland. I'm talking about Brandon Myers. College tight ends, more often than not, they are expected to be playmakers, that additional wide receiver. And Ebron, to me, fits that mold. So you have to see something on film or you have to see some intangibles that lead you to believe this guy, if we ask him to be that additional offensive lineman, he's going to come in and he's going to deliver. And I think there's question marks tied to Ebron. As attractive as he is, I still think there's some question marks. Sonny Boy, speaking of that topic, says all of these guys have question marks. Even Clooney has question marks. Clowney, I guess he was referring to. You don't know what you're going to get. And that's the case always when it comes to the draft. I mean, no argument there. You always take a risk with a young guy because you can pick the most prolific college talent, take him with the number overall pick. How many busts have we seen at number one? Tons. You just try to do your homework and you try to put the puzzle together and hope, hey, I can envision this guy within our system. Now, the other thing you have to keep in mind, I'm not expecting this Giants offense to completely look revamped. You know, I think there's going to be some principles in play that Tom Coughlin enjoyed, but McAdoo's going to bring his own new wrinkles. We don't know if that has changed the conversation in terms of how the Giants approach the draft. Keep that in mind. You know, McAdoo may say to himself, hey, these are the things that I want to do with respect to our offense. So this is a guy that I think would be a perfect piece. You know, maybe they're going to give that greater credence as a result of McAdoo coming in, as opposed to using their old system where they've had their usual suspects in terms of the coaching staff and everybody has made clear what their principles are. We don't know if that's going to change the approach. You know, Jerry Reese still has his ideology and still believes in taking the top talent and the scouts work the system how they've been doing. But I think the fact that you have some new coaches in the mix and some new voices, you know, that perhaps could tweak and change the philosophy just a tad. So you also need to at least keep that in mind. Josh Dunn writes in, I think the fact we only scored 7 points total against the Chiefs, Seahawks, and Panthers supports this. I don't know exactly what he was alluding to. He put in Schmelk's Twitter handle, and I'm sure Schmelk on a plane to Iowa is having all eyes on his Twitter handle. So I'm not really sure what Josh was trying to allude to there. If Josh can provide another tweet to clarify, we'll try to make sense of what he was touching on. Let's head back to the phone lines. We've got David in the Bronx. David, what's happening?
Hey there, Lance. How you doing?
Doing very well, David. How about yourself?
All right, all righty. I want to talk about the Giants' defense. The Giants' defense, really, when you look at it, it's a lot better than what we think, especially in the front four. Because when you look at Marcus Coon, I know he was a seventh-round draft pick, but he does something that most linemen have a hard time incorporating in their game. He actually gave a push in the inside of the pocket, and when he couldn't go no further, his hands went up. He deflected a lot of passes.
Well, I think Marcus Coon has a great deal of talent, and it was unfortunate that he was coming off the torn ACL, and that's a guy that you still need to factor into the equation, as you mentioned, because he didn't have a great deal of time last season on the field because he was recovering from that knee injury. So, you know, that to me is a player that was already established on the roster. You throw him in the mix with the veterans that they've brought in and whoever they're going to draft. I think that there's certainly a nice mix. You have to keep in mind also, David, let's not forget, even though the defense did get off to a rocky start, it finished eighth overall. So the defense progressively improved over the course of the season, and you take into consideration that they brought in some additional playmakers, specifically in the secondary. You know, I think things look really good on paper. But once again, we're, you know, always excited over what's on paper and speculation, and this guy's going to gel with this guy. It really all depends on, you know, what happens on the football field. But at least from the basis of need, I think the Giants were very aggressive and wise in terms of how they spent their money.
Right. And now as for offense, I was looking at this guy that we drafted also in the later rounds from Ohio. University. Edward Herman.
Eric Herman, correct.
Yeah, does anybody know if he has progressed since being on the practice squad? Because I look at him and he's had a great number of pancakes at any level, in collegiate level, in high school. To get a pancake, it's hard to do.
Well, you're right about that. That's what his MO was. That's what he was known for, the fact that he would lay out everybody he went up against. But I think that clearly that wasn't necessarily translating to the NFL level based on what the Giants saw on the practice field, and that's why he didn't necessarily move up. Because you could argue, based on all the injuries they had on the offensive line, that there was ample opportunity for a player like Eric Herman to step in even late in the season, David, and really show his true colors. The fact that they did not give him the green light should be a signal that clearly he was not ready to take the next step. With another full offseason under his belt and more competition, there's going to be a sense of urgency for Eric Herman to step up his game. So I think this, to me, is an integral and an important offseason for us to really get the gist on whether or not he's ready to take the next step. Remember, there's been other projects within the Giants organization. How many years were we talking about James Brewer? James Brewer finally got an opportunity in terms of more playing time, but you know, just because you get more playing time doesn't mean you're going to take full advantage of those opportunities.
Right. Okay. And as for the draft, I'm like with Shakes on Team Evans bandwagon. But when I start the size of the players, John had said something very interesting. You need somebody to be an impact player that can give you around about maybe a couple of snaps during the game and be productive. When I look at Mike Evans, at best, we might can get him on the field in the red zone, but he's still got a good amount to learn. But there's no doubt in my mind that he's not going to be maybe our version of Larry Fitzgerald. I really feel that about kids.
Well, I mean, clearly you feel extremely strong about him if you're comparing him to Larry Fitzgerald. And, David, appreciate the phone call. In terms of what you were touching on, what John had mentioned, and I was echoing those sentiments early in the show, if you're going to grab a guy at the 12th overall pick, you're right. He better come in and make an immediate impact. Once again, you're not in the business of drafting a project at number 12. That's why, you know, when we're talking about tight ends, if I grab a tight end with the 12th overall pick, I want to know, without any concern, he's a two-way tight end. He can block, he can catch passes. I want to know that. I want to know that with certainty. If I have one question mark on the pad, I'm going to think twice about taking him. With a wide receiver, I want to make sure that he can run all types of routes. He can also block at the line of scrimmage. Let's not lose track of that. In the Giants system, wide receivers, it's important for them to block. If you look back at when the Giants had great running games, you could point to guys like Amani Toomer and Plexico Burress who were very effective in terms of providing that second layer of blocking up the field. So you want to know that you bring in a wide receiver, he's comfortable doing that. He's comfortable getting down and dirty. He's comfortable getting physical. Evans has the size, and David was touching on this. He's got the size to be a red zone target, but, you know, let's not bring up Ramsey Barden all over again here. You know, I know I'm going to touch a nerve with Giants fans, and our favorite phrase here is he can't teach height. And I know a lot of Giants fans, we get caught up in that height department. Oh, this guy's 6'7". I'll use a parallel in the NBA. You could bring in a 7-footer, and he may have two left feet. So just because he's 7 feet tall doesn't mean he's going to be a beast inside. Height can play tricks with you, and we've seen that on full display with respect to the Giants and some of the previous wide receivers that they've had. So don't necessarily get caught up, oh, this guy's 6'5". He'd be an ideal fit. Ben McAdoo is going to have a love affair with him. Eli's going to throw it up. That fade, it'll work to perfection. Our offensive issues are all solved. I'd be very cautious adopting that philosophy. Let's see what's going on Twitter here. H. Carson fan writes in, you don't really know if Ebron can or will block till you draft him. Well, you're right about that, but you should have a good read on that before you draft him there. So I understand what you're alluding to, but you should know based on what you see from film in college, what you see through some of his workouts and talking to him, you should at least tell, does the guy have a passion for blocking? Does the guy have a desire to block? You can get that just based on having a conversation. Now, once again, I'm not in the business of ripping apart Brandon Myers. I think that what he did with Oakland should not be diminished. He was productive, but it was right for that system. What the Giants were asking him to do, it was not a good meet. It was not a good match. So you should be able to sit down with the guy and say, hey, Ebron, for example, we know what you did in North Carolina, but in our system, as much as we want you to be a threat and stretch the field, there is going to be X amount of plays every game where you're just going to have to stay at the line of scrimmage and block. Is that something that, you know, you see yourself in as? There's nothing wrong with having those conversations early. Not at all. I don't see that being a problem. And that's part of doing your homework for any scout, for any GM. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Bobby in New Jersey. Bobby, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Doing well, Bobby. How about yourself? What you got?
I'm doing good. I got a couple things for you. I'm listening to what some of the callers are saying and your take on things. I talked a little with John about it yesterday, but if it was up to you, you were in the war room, who are you taking at 12?
Well, I like Aaron Donald. I think that that would be a good fit for the Giants, and a number of people have weighed in on that because I think that he's the type of guy that can certainly come in and be that impact type of player. You know, Mike Evans to me is intriguing. You know, as much as I've been cautious with what I'm saying about him, I still think he is right up there after Sammy Watkins is off the board. So he's the type of guy that has played in a competitive offensive system. He's played with a playmaker in Johnny Manziel. Whether you love or hate him, Manziel is still a guy that made plays for his wide receivers. And Evans has the build and the size. So, you know, those are two guys in particular. As far as offensive linemen go, you know, I think the Giants address some of their needs. However, there are some big-time playmakers after you get to maybe the cluster of depth. So if Matthews is there, you know, that's a guy that I think you need to consider. I don't think Robinson is going to be there at 12 because he's a top-notch offensive lineman who's above and beyond the rest of the pack. So I'd be stunned if he falls to the Giants at 12. But those three guys, Matthews, Evans, and Donald, I think are players that could be in the discussion for the Giants.
Okay. Now, on that, I get what you're saying, but the way I look at it is, first off, like you were saying before, everybody's a risk. You know what I mean? You know, when people drafted anybody who's good now, you know, there's always a doubt in the past. You know, there's very few guys, probably besides like Megatron, who come out and you're just like sold that they're going to be a stud. You know it, you know? But what I was going to say is with Donald or Evans, you think that at 12, the value you're getting at the 12th pick, you would take a guy like Donald or Evans, and then what do you do with Hankins and Jenkins, or what do you do with Randall's development? You know, where are you going to stick these guys if they're going to come in right away?
Well, in terms of where you would stick Aaron Donald, you mentioned Jenkins. First of all, you can use Jenkins as an end. Let's not forget about that. So even if you bring in Donald and you want to put him next to Hankins, and Hankins, I think, showed a lot last season, and he's a guy that's going to be able to fill the void left behind by anybody else that they may have lost, specifically Linville Joseph. So they already have the answer to Linville Joseph. You move Jenkins and you use him as a rotational player on the end. You can get all three on the field at the same time. You know, then you also have Marcus Kuhn as, let's say, an insurance blanket there, security blanket, whatever you want to call him. So I think there's ample room to throw him in. As far as Mike Evans is concerned, Reuben Randall and Victor Cruz, you know, are going to be your two legitimate top wide receivers. You know, Mario Manningham, remember, is coming off the knee injury. Let's see what happens.
I'm not sold on Randall. I just feel like I can't see them with the 12th pick taking. I think he would be good. but I just can't see the Giants mentality taking Evans when there's all this hype about seeing what Randall has as a number two, you know, rather than just taking a guy and putting him. I could see them getting someone in the later rounds who's got potential, see what Randall's about. If he doesn't do well this year, letting the guy they draft in the second or third, who all still have talent, let them get a shot next year if we don't address it some other way. But, I mean, Donald, I know Donald's a good player. I've seen tape. I just feel like the way the Giants went about it, you have Colin Jenkins who signed for another two years, I think, maybe three. And Hankins, who pretty much is like the Linval Joseph mold, big run stopper. And then they like Kuhn, and they signed Patterson back. So I feel like they put guys behind the depth there. As I tell John all the time, I'm an Ebron guy because I feel like you don't know that he can block, but say we get one of the guys in the later round, can you teach them to be fast and be a playmaker and catch hard-to-reach balls? You can't. You can teach them to block, though. You can get a guy to work with him. He's not me, you know what I mean? I'm 5'11", you know, 180. I'm not going to block anybody no matter how much you teach me because I don't have it. I don't have the physical gift.
Well, but keep in mind, Bobby, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, you also have to want to block. I understand that you said you can teach how somebody should block, but you need to want to block, and that's the X factor. Because there are veterans out there that don't want to block. They just want to catch the football. So the desire, the want to block is also a very important factor to weigh.
Yeah, I feel like for everything I hear about the kid, though, I feel he keeps saying about how he wants to be one of the best tight ends in the league. And I feel like watching tape myself and I guess like reading like analysis from different like guys, Kuiper, all these other guys, say that watching tape, you can see that he's an aggressive blocker. It's almost like he just doesn't know what he's doing. That's why he fails. Like, yeah, I saw a bunch of tapes too where he's over-aggressive, where he looks like he's about to do a great block, but the guy that he's trying to block knows he's coming at him full speed and uses his body against him. You get what I'm saying?
Like, well, it comes down to the fundamentals is what you're touching on, meaning he has the intangibles, he has the physical characteristics. Now it's just a matter of putting everything together.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a need. I feel like at 12, you take him, put him, plug him in, there's no competition right there. You're gonna get your value out of your 12th pick right then and there. And then, like I said to John as well, the risk with having Randall start on the outside, he could really do good or he could really not do good. So then you're in a predicament where you don't get Ebron, you don't really have a pass-catching threat tight end. Guys are just going to – I would just double Victor Cruz. Randall's got to have to work. You know what I mean? You don't have a tight end who's going to receive. Your running back's going to try and get free. It's just – I feel like it's very easy to just focus in on our offense if we don't have a playmaking tight end. You get him – he's going to, regardless if he struggles to block a little in the beginning, he's got to learn. We got veterans who can teach him, help him, the coaches. But then you have, he can outrun safeties. I mean, he can outrun linebackers. He's too big for safeties. So they're not going to be able to focus on Victor. And it also takes pressure off Randall to just be the guy besides Victor, you know what I mean?
Well, also, don't forget about Jarrell Jernigan, who showed some flashes late in the season. I think the Giants have some confidence in him. If he could pick up where he left off, listen, if they let him run wild the opposition, you know, he's the type of guy that can become a reliable third wide receiver, too.
Yeah, if you had to bet your money, though, you banking on him?
Well, I'm not necessarily banking on him because he doesn't have a great track record, so I can understand the, you know, skepticism, but I think that he showed enough over the last few games last year that you at least have to see what he can pan out to. I think that you at least owe yourself that before you all of a sudden cut ties and go in a different direction.
I think he could definitely be useful. He could be like a weapon. Do I think he could elevate to a second or first wide receiver? Probably not, but there's a chance. But I feel like maybe in the third receiver role, he could do some damage. But I just feel like if we don't address if we end up getting Ebron and going into next season, I feel like our offense will be on the upswing. You won't have to worry as much. We don't get a tight end like Ebron, and if Greg Robinson or Jake Matthews falls to 12, I would take that. I will not argue with that because I'm not confident in Beattie in the next few years.
Well, you can never have enough young offensive linemen. I always say that. Yeah. So, I mean, you'd be stupid if you passed up on those guys and they're still there.
Well, I just feel like we were saying, someone said earlier, if it's not them two, I feel like at 12, there's all tackles. We need, you know, we need inside, interior linemen, which you can get in the second or third round.
Correct. I agree with that.
Really good guys, you know. But if we get if one of those guys fell, there's just a supreme talent. You got to take them. But other than that, you know, you go a different direction. Our offense is going to look last year. Some guy gave John a stat yesterday. Our offense versus the worst defenses, I think it was the bottom eight defenses in the league we played, or it was like top 10 worst defenses in the league. We played eight games versus those defenses, and we did terrible. Then versus the top 10 offenses, I think we scored like 7 points. So it just showed, like the stat, it really showed us how bad the offense was last year.
Well, and part of it was because of the offensive line. And listen, Bobby, appreciate the phone call. I want to try to get some other callers in here. And I remember breaking down the secondaries each and every week last season. You know, you'd look at Carolina's secondary, and you'd look at Philadelphia's secondary, and Minnesota's secondary, which had the worst secondary in the NFL. They gave up the most passing touchdowns. And every week, John and I would sit back, and we'd say, oh, this is a juicy matchup. This is going to be the week. The offense is going to break out. And what happened? It was the same issues all over again. The offensive line couldn't block. So, you know, let's not forget about that. And they're not going to be bringing back all the same personnel. I understand we're all referring back to the numbers last year, but they went out, they made some changes. The other thing that everybody seems to be overlooking is Rashad Jennings is going to catch the football out of the backfield. He did that in Oakland. The numbers weren't jumping off the page, but he is a guy that I think McAdoo is going to look at and say, hey, we need to get him out in open space with the football, and it's not just running. So that's an additional threat. A reliable player that you can use as an added receiver who's going to draw some attention. Then you bank perhaps on Jernigan taking the next step in his development, as well as Randall. You know, keep in mind, Randall has had his fair share as shares of ups and downs, but another offseason should help increase his confidence and gain more continuity between he and Eli Manning. Victor Cruz, we know what to expect out of Victor Cruz. And the other thing I'll say about the tight end, and I always bring this up, the Giants have had a very good track record with bringing in tight ends that you may have not recognized their names and you may have not thought that they were going to be guys that would stretch the field. And because of the coaching staff and the development that they do, they've panned out. Jake Ballard, to me, is the perfect example. He's a guy, if you watched him up close and personal, did not have speed, did not have a great deal of versatility, and certainly was not scaring secondaries. But each and every week, he'd amaze you. He'd run by the opposition and he'd make a big catch. So am I telling you that Adrian Robinson is going to become that guy? Or another free agent that they go out and get is going to become that guy? No. However, with McAdoo's track record, I'd feel pretty good that he could develop a tight end just like Mike Pope has. And all you need to do is look at the Packers. And I'm not just talking about JerMichael Finley. Andrew Corliss is a guy that he developed. Did you know about Andrew Corliss before he took over JerMichael Finley? You had Andrew Corliss on your fantasy team? Kudos to you. Tom Crabtree, was he a guy that you were really zoning in on? He's had a very good track record, and you need to at least have confidence in that if they didn't grab an Ebron at 12, let's say. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Jeff is in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
How you doing, buddy? Haven't talked to you in a while.
Long time no speak indeed. So how's Rhode Island treating you? How's life?
Life is okay.
All right. Well, what do you got for us this morning?
All right, this is what I got for you. First of all, I'm not really thinking that the Giants have done enough with rebuilding the offensive line. I think that, for the 2014 season, our offense is only going to be as good as the offensive line rebuild. So that's why I'm thinking that my first three picks in the draft, I'm not going to go into names, but position-wise, I'm going O-line, and then I'm going to go wide receiver, and then I'll go tight end after that. I just think that they haven't done enough with the offensive line rebuild. I'm not confident in what they've done so far. And that's what the whole offense hinges
on. Across the board, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Jeff, but when you say you're concerned about the offensive line, I'm just curious, is it a particular position, such as maybe center, left tackle, right tackle, or are you really worried across the board here?
I'm pretty much worried across the board. And, I mean, right now, for example, we only have one center on the roster, and, he had a bad wheel a couple of years ago.
Correct. Talk about J.D. Walton. You're right, and he does have a track record of getting hurt. That's a fair it's a fair skepticism to have. I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what we're going to get out of these guys. I mean, who knows? I mean, we really don't know. To me, they're all question marks right now, except for right tackle. Okay, I think that's probably the only position that's not a question mark in my mind. But another question I had was in regards to the salary cap. I guess after June 1st, we'll have approximately $8.5 million under the cap, I believe, somewhere in that vicinity. Is that going to be enough to sign everybody that we need to sign with the draft and, other free agents, et cetera?
Yeah, I don't see that being a concern at all in terms of the draft picks. And the way the draft works, it doesn't necessarily eat up all the remaining cap space that you have because things are designated for draft picks. So I wouldn't worry about them not being able to sign draft picks. In terms of being able to be aggressive after the draft and perhaps, pick up another free agent or two, it really will depend on how aggressive other teams are. Because what's going to happen is, Jeff, once the draft ends, teams still going to have issues, still have voids, and they're going to rush to sign guys that are still on the market. So some teams, like the Raiders, for example, who had $66 million to start, they're going to have a little bit more cap space and flexibility than a team like the Giants, who spent a great deal of their space. So, I think you need to take that into consideration. They could certainly have some flexibility to add a third-tier guy on the depth chart, but I wouldn't get your hopes up of getting a big-time playmaker after the draft.
Right, right. But once again, I think Jerry's really going to nail this draft. I mean, it's good. I can't see why we can't come out of this with at least two starters. I think that'd be really nice.
You should definitely expect two starters. I mean, with the amount of picks they have and the depth at certain positions, I don't think that's asking for much, Jeff.
Yeah, but I'm still going with O-line the first pick, so we'll see how it plays out. You have a good day, buddy.
Sounds good, Jeff. Good hearing from you. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W on Twitter. Offensive line was the position that I was emphasizing before free agency started, and everyone pretty much agreed. The fact that they went out, they got some free agents, leads me to believe that perhaps it's not as much of an urgent need at 12 as it was a few weeks ago, but I think Jeff did raise a point of concern where there are certain positions where there's injuries and there's not a great deal of depth. However, with that being said, I'm not taking a center at number 12. So if that's the one position that you're concerned about, you wait until the later rounds. You do not take a center at 12. Justin Pugh, we know at right tackle, had a great rookie year, specifically in the second half. Beedy needs a bounce back year. Doesn't hurt to have some insurance there. And interior offensive lineman, outside of Jeff Schwartz, who they brought in, you can always use some added depth because some of the other guys that they brought in are veterans, like a John Jerry, for example, from the Miami Dolphins. These are not necessarily guys that are just coming out of college. So infusing some additional youth doesn't hurt. But I'm not grabbing a center at 12. If anything, if you're going to grab an offensive lineman at 12, it's going to be a tackle, which means you hope that you can get a Matthews or a Robinson. At least every team is keeping their fingers crossed. It may be a long shot to have one of those two even fall to you at 12 because, there are a number of teams that realize it's not easy to grab a left tackle. It's not easy to have the spending money to grab somebody in free agency. So if you have an opportunity to grab a young guy that can really be on your offensive line for the next few years, you're not going to hesitate to grab somebody like that. And when you look at the teams that are picking before the Giants, I could certainly point to a number of teams that would grab a left tackle in a heartbeat. The Falcons definitely jumps off the page. Jaguars, remember, they took Luke Joeckel last season, and they brought in a couple of free agents, and Beatles is going to be their left tackle this season. At least that's what they anticipate. So I don't know if that's a team that's going to want to grab an offensive lineman. A couple of other teams that are in front of the Giants to have some stability. Tampa Bay went out in free agency, beefed up its offensive line. So, you know, there's a number of teams that right now I could pencil in a few areas of need. That doesn't mean necessarily they're going to follow the script. We know there's always surprises come draft day. Let's take a quick look at Twitter before we head back to the lines. I know a number of you reacting to what we were discussing in terms of the needs for the Giants. Mike Farmer writes in, can survive without Ebron, Evans, or Donald. It was proved they can't survive with no holes opened and Eli on his back. Well, I think that pretty much sums up the 2013 season. The offensive line was the area of concern. And everything else stemmed off of the issues with the offensive line. The offensive line performed a little bit more consistently. You know, maybe you're not going to see as many issues that came to the forefront. But if you can't block, it means you can't run, you can't pass. And if you can't run and you can't pass, I don't know what else you're going to do in the game of football. Stu writes in, Jake Ballard did okay because Nick's, Mario, and Cruz playing real good on the outside and slot. Otherwise, he would have stunk like Myers. Well, not going to deny the fact that when you have talent around you, it takes attention away from you and you have some favorable one-on-one matchups. But we're also making it sound as if the Giants have no talent on offense. And I just said, Rashad Jennings, Victor Cruz, those are two guys that are going to take some attention. Then Reuben Randall, listen, he hasn't been the most consistent receiver, but he still draws attention. You're not leaving Reuben Randall wide open, I'm sorry. And if Jarrell Jernigan picks up where he left off, you're not going to leave him open. So it's not as if the Giants don't have weapons on offense. If all of those guys make plays and they do it consistently and Eli's well protected and he has time and he can spread the wealth, whoever you put in at tight end, if he has a favorable one-on-one matchup, you would assume he's going to be able to get down the field. And you don't necessarily need a name to do that. Let's head back to the lines and we go to, oh, here's where we spice the program up. Guy that I clearly haven't heard from in quite some time. Just as I haven't heard from the rest of you, Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, how are we doing?
I'm all right, man. What's going on?
You tell me, Shakes. You know, soft-spoken to start this phone call. I was expecting a little bit more energy. Haven't been here for a few weeks. You know, I want to amp up the program, and you sound like you're hiding in the corner.
Oh, no. I just wanted to know how you've been, man.
I've been good, man. I've been keeping busy.
Cool. All right, I wanted to jump in on this Ebron thing. Of course, you know what I mean, you say you wanted to spice this up, and I'm definitely going to do that with this Ebron thing because I'm so tired of Team Ebron thinking that it's Ebron or die. Like you have to get Ebron or we have no tight end. Like, there's no tight ends in the second, third, and fourth round that you can get that's going to in our system. Look, I'm a Nicholas guy. I am a Troy Nicholas guy. I like the kid. He reminds me of Bavaro. He's a Bavaro-ish type. I'm not going to say he's Bavaro, but he's Bavaro-ish. And so that's the type of guy that we want. People, this one guy I was arguing with yesterday.
Not arguing with anybody? Anyway.
No, yeah, you're right. But he was, you know, he came Ebron, and he's like, you know, I guess, you know, I'm still got my Shockey jersey on. And that's cool. I understand that. We want a dynamic tight end like Shockey. Nicholas is that guy. Nicholas is more like Shockey than Ebron is. Ebron is, he's basically a wide receiver that we don't know can block. You know, and it just amazes me that they sold Ebron to die, but when they don't know that this guy can block.
Well, what happens is, you know, Ebron to me is the attractive, sexy player in this year's draft. You know, there's a lot of hype surrounding him, and everybody says Ebron, 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 and half of these people probably never even saw him on film. But, you know, they hear the name, and they're like, oh, well, I heard good things about him, so it's an ideal fit. Just to clarify for the audience, in case people don't know who Troy Nicholas is, he's the Notre Dame tight end, just so people can put things in context.
Yeah, and he's a beast, man. You can't really get him down. He's going to carry guys on his back, and that's what Shockey did too. You know what I'm saying? And they want Shockey. You know, Shockey could block. We don't know if Ebron can block, man. So for everybody that's Ebron or die, man, hold the horses. Hold your horses. We can get a guy like Nicholas in the second round. It's not Ebron or die. But Team Evans, man, Team Evans, if we can get Evans, we got to have him. Got to have him in his wide receiver core. That will complete it. And then we can get Nicholas. It's over. Thanks for taking my call, man.
Sounds good, Shakes. And Troy Nicholas, the Notre Dame tight end. Notre Dame also produced Tyler Eifert, who went to the Bengals in the first round, if you recall, to team up with Jermaine Gresham. So they have the ability to produce tight ends. And there is a fall-off, which somebody brought up on Twitter earlier, in the tight end department, I would say from an athleticism standpoint, because Ebron really stands out from the rest of the group. That doesn't mean that you can't get a quality blocker or a quality presence, perhaps, in a later round, if you were to miss out on Ebron. I would agree somewhat with Shakes. I think that there is a tremendous amount of hype surrounding Ebron, and I'm not downgrading his talent, but I almost feel as if people are saying, you know, Ebron is a must-have, and if you pass up on him, you know, you're passing up on the next Jimmy Graham. Remember, Jimmy Graham was a third-round pick. Number of key tight ends in this league were not necessarily number one first-round picks. You got to keep that in mind. We get caught up with these names, and we say, hey, we've got to reach for them with that 12th overall pick, where sometimes it's better to step back, evaluate, and look for a guy that's immediately going to come in. How many tight ends can you say in the first round immediately have come in and made an instantaneous impact? I'm willing to listen. Now, let's start throwing out names. We have to do some homework and do some research, but, you know, no names really are jumping out where, you know, they've taken them in the first round and, wow, year one, holy moly. I mean, this guy was through the roof. Once again, the top tight ends in this league, Jimmy Graham, to me, who obviously is a guy that you put at the top of the list, and let's face it, Jimmy Graham, he's not the ideal blocker. Jimmy Graham is known for his receiving skills. You line up Jimmy Graham at the offensive line, I wouldn't rank him as a top blocking tight end in the league. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W-J, is in Pennsylvania. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, Jay. How about yourself? What you got?
Oh, I'm all right. Yeah, I was just wanted to weigh in on our first-round pick. You know, everyone talks about Ebron and Evans. You know, I love Evans. Evans is a receiver that I would love to see us get. You know, naturally, if Matthews or Robinson drops, you want to take them. It's unlikely that they're going to be there. But say if someone wanted our number 12 pick, would you feel that it would be smart to trade down to, say, the early to mid-20s, and there you still got Kelvin Benjamin is still going to be there.
Naturally,
you can still grab Troy Nicholas in the second round. Offensive linemen can be found in the mid-rounds easily. I mean, look at David Deal. You know, we found him late in the round, and he ended up being a Pro Bowler. So would you see that would be a logical move to make?
Well, it would be more logical and it would make sense based on the Giants' track record to trade down than trade up. I think a lot will be determined based on how their draft board looks, and if they feel, hey, we could pick one of four players if they fell to us with the 21st pick, let's say, if they move down, then I could see the Giants doing that because you at least get an additional pick and you can stock up on talent, as you mentioned, in the second or the third round. So, yes, that would make sense if there's a guy at 12 where they say, you know what? We can maybe pass on him. We can live without him. We move down 10 selections. We could still get an impactful player. That would make sense, absolutely.
because I personally don't like Ebron at all. I think he's overrated. But
well, you're in the minority, according to our callers, so I give you credit for throwing that out.
I like Troy Nicholas. I mean, Notre Dame has produced a lot of good tight ends. You know, you got Rudolph. And
that's another good example of the Vikings, correct. Good point.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Ebron goes, he can't block. Yeah, he's a good receiver, but, I mean, he's no Rob Gronkowski either. So I just I think it would be more logical for us to trade down, and there will be other receivers there if we need a receiver such as Kelvin Benjamin. And Troy Nicholas will be in the second round, and there's a lot of offensive linemen in this draft too.
Great deal of depth at that position.
We've got the veterans, and we've already signed the veterans at free agency, so we can develop younger offensive linemen that we take in the third, fourth round.
Very true. I think that you have enough depth at the offensive line with veterans where, you know, maybe it buys you some additional time to develop. However, remember, they've crossed that bridge before where they bring in young guys and they're like, all right, we're going to develop them. We're going to develop them. And, you know, I'm sitting and looking at my watch. You're sitting and looking at your watch and you're saying, okay, when is this guy going to pan out? So, yes, I think they did buy them some time via free agency. I agree with you, Jay. But you still, if you're going to draft an offensive lineman, even in the third or fourth round, you still want to make sure, hey, this guy's going to come in and he's going to adapt to our system very smoothly.
Of course.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you for taking my call.
You got it. Thanks for the phone call, Jay. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, our daily morning program on Giants.com. Let's continue to work the phones. And another one of our usual suspects. We go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
What's happening, Lance? How you doing, buddy?
Doing very well, Steve. How about yourself?
Good. Glad to hear you, man. I've been hoping you would come back and bless us with your presence.
Once in a while, they allow me back in the building. You know, I got to really push some buttons, but thankfully, they opened the doors for me this morning.
Well, we're blessed to have you, man.
Appreciate that.
Great show. Listen, you know, I'm not going to sit here and go back and forth. You know, I feel bad for my man Shakes because, you know, Evans may not even be there. And I think he needs to keep that in mind. And I personally won't be disappointed with Ebron or Evans. But I tell you, you know, you brought up something earlier where you kind of felt like, you know, some of these young guys, you know, may get an opportunity to play, and I'm just wondering, what do you think about that? Do you think Tom Coughlin realizes, you know, after Mara's remarks about Jernigan last year and what I think we've kind of all felt going along, because I personally feel like we only play who we pay, and I just feel like, you know, we have probably have a lot more hidden talent that's really never gotten a full opportunity to really shine, and I kind of blame, you know, last year's letdown more on the coaching than anything. You know, I just really feel like, yeah, we had some, you know, some offensive line letdowns, you know, but I don't really think it was so much personnel as I do. I think it was team and players not being comfortable in the position that they were, you know, especially Beattie, you know, and who he was playing next to. So I think, you know, we just need to get a little bit more cohesiveness to the offensive line and make sure that players are in their rightful position. You know, that really concerns me, you know, more than anything. And I felt like, you know, the running game is what really hurt the offensive line more than anything, or the lack of running game. So I wanted to know what your thoughts were on that as far as, you know, the scheme that we ran. And do you really feel like, you know, it was really all about the players as opposed to, you know, a couple key injuries and the play calling and the lack of running game?
Well, I think you bring up a good point, Steve, the fact that there was so much movement. There was a game of musical chairs on the offensive line, and Beattie, for example, was playing next to a different guard on a weekly basis, and, you know, maybe he was feeling and hearing the footsteps and overcompensating or something to that degree, and I think that contributed to some of his struggles, whereas if you put him next to Jeff Schwartz, who you hope stays healthy and plays a full season, perhaps that will help Beattie get back to a higher level. I'm not really pointing the finger at the coaching staff. I think it was the injuries that contributed more to the ups and downs of the offensive line, because I go back to Eric Hermann, and one of the other callers brought up Eric Hermann earlier in the program. I'm not sure you heard, Steve, and, you know,
yeah,
Eric Hermann, with his size, you would think, hey, put in that guy, just see what he's got. If the coaching staff is not putting him out there, you know, doesn't that send a message that, you know, maybe he's not ready to go? And I understand where you're coming from. And John Mara, to me, made a very strong statement. Why did it take so long for us to discover Jarrell Jernigan? And that is a statement that stuck with me this entire offseason. I'm going to keep that in mind as this season approaches to see, is the trend going to change? You know, are they going to allow rookies to come in week one and, you know, give them a longer leash? I think that's a fair point. But, for example, I think you were one of the people that during the season you were saying, hey, give Michael Cox more of an opportunity. Well, you know,
I was just about to say that.
But keep this in mind, Steve. Even the opportunities that Michael Cox got, you know, did he blow you away? Did he say, you know what? I've got to see more. This guy's going to change the game. You know, there were times where he lost the football.
No.
He missed assignments. So you got to also keep that in mind.
Listen, but I always felt like when he was in, it was so obvious he was going to get the ball that he really didn't have a chance. I mean, and then, of course, on the kickoff return, we took him off kickoff return, and he was doing great at that. So, I mean, I guess it's all relative, but no, I have lost confidence in the coaches, even before what Mr. Mara said, as far as them playing, giving people adequate opportunities to fail if that's what they're going to do. You know, I just feel like our players are not getting developed enough. And I'm just, you know, I hope, you know, that the coaching staff really puts a little bit more time into making sure that these players are getting opportunity and then they're getting developed. And, you know, I'll leave it at that. Feel free to comment on that. But last thing I wanted to say before I take up a bunch of time is, you know, my biggest concern is I don't really want to see us go, you know, moving up or doing too much as far on the offense, because I really feel like we really need to obviously address the running game. I think, you know, Rashad really kind of gives me a little bit of confidence in that. But ultimately, to me, it just seemed like other than the play calling that everybody will agree to seem like was so predictable, I think we obviously have to have balanced time of possession. But to me, the main thing that we all need to worry about more than Ebron or any other player is Eli. And him, you know, having being a little bit more, you know, cautious with where he's placing the ball. I'm hoping to see a little bit more, like you said, passes to Jennings out of the backfield and things of that nature. So I don't know if it was just the predictability. Yeah, he was under pressure, but the mistakes he was making and the interceptions for the last 2 years, that's what really concerns me going into. I don't care how many other weapons we got. And you can say with the offensive line all along, but we're not going to be able to do seven-step drops all the time, not without a running game. We might be able to do seven-step drops with a running game, but until Eli's getting a little bit quicker, you know, getting rid of the ball faster and, you know, and more accurately, then we're always going to have offensive problems.
Well, you would assume, and Steve, appreciate the phone call. Always good talking with you. You would assume with a new quarterback's coach and a new offensive coordinator, you know, it's not just so simple, hey, bringing the new personnel, as Steve just touched on. They're also going to work with Eli's mechanics. Goes without saying that some of his decisions, regardless of how bad the offensive line was, contributed to some of the team's woes too. So he certainly needs to get back on the same page. And I think with a full offseason, new voices, a new offensive line, at least on paper, it looks good, and that they should be able to shore up those issues. With respect to having to address the running back core that Steve was touching on, you brought back Peyton Hillis. Michael Cox is still on the roster. And David Wilson. Wilson's a question mark because of the injury. Jennings you brought in. And I like Jennings' versatility. I like what he did in Oakland as a receiver and a running back. But you're not necessarily going to say, hey, Jennings, we're going to give you 25 carries a game. But Hillis is still reliable to help balance the load. And, you know, Michael Cox, he's not necessarily guaranteed a roster spot. You figure there's going to be some competition. There is definitely room for the Giants to draft a running back. There's absolute room to draft a running back. And I think a number of you have voiced that on Twitter and have called in. I would not be stunned if the Giants take a running back. But then again, if you're going to draft a running back, you do it in round 4, round 5. You don't need to do it very early. You don't. It's not necessary. 201-939-4513. Back to the lines. Let's get Antonio in New York City. Antonio, what's happening?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Doing well, Antonio. What you got?
Well, last time I called, I was very upset because of the wide receiver and the tight end position that they're getting, that they don't have a veteran and a pro. Now, my question is, why can they not pick Santonio Holmes? They should have picked that up. I think that's a good pick, picking up Santonio Holmes. He could play the left, he could play the right, and you could have Manningham play the right, and Cruz could play the slot.
I still don't understand. Why did they have the money to pick up San Antonio Holmes?
Well, there's two things and two red flags about San Antonio Holmes. Number one, he's been plagued by injuries over the last few seasons. And the Giants just came off a season where everybody got hurt, Antonio. So the last thing you want to do is bring in a guy that got that has that track record. Number two, you know, this is based on the reports and based on what we heard, what he did within the Jets camp and the Jets locker room, wasn't the best personality there, wasn't the best locker room guy. You know, that doesn't really fit into what Tom Coughlin's preaching and selling to the team. So right away, those are two things that I think would scare off most teams, including the Giants.
And I still think they should still also pick up Jermichael Finch, the tight end from Green Bay.
You mean Jermichael Finley?
I believe, yes, but I believe
he may be flinching. That may be the case.
Well, yeah, he may be, but I feel like he's still a pretty good tight end, and they should pick him up.
Well,
due to injuries, I don't know how it is.
Well, he is a very good tight end, and I think that if he proves he's healthy. And once again, I don't think he's going to be signed before the draft because teams are not knocking on his door because of the health concern. And there's other reports that I've read, keep in mind, Antonio, that he may be contemplating retirement. So he's no lock to want to continue playing. But let's put it this way. If he's still out there and he has confidence to go out there, and let's say it's, you know, 2 weeks left in training camp, you don't have to break open the piggy bank. You have a roster spot. I don't think there's any harm in bringing him in, considering he knows Ben McAdoo. But I wouldn't necessarily knock down his door right now. I'd see what happens with the draft, see what happens if another guy gets cut, and then if Finley is your fallback option, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Of course, and what I was also saying is, too, that when somebody was talking about that, the offensive line is very important. And for what I've seen from the offensive line, it's just been very sloppy. I still want to know what is going to happen to Chris Neen. Like, is he going to come back, or are they going to get rid of him because due to his bad injury? He's still a good tackle, and he's still a good guard. I still want to know what is going to happen to Chris.
Well, in terms of Chris Snee's future, and appreciate the phone call, Antonio. Thanks so much for weighing in. Snee right now is penciled in as the starter. He also needs to prove that he can remain healthy, and that's why you need to have depth behind him. But he is very much in the Giants' plans with the restructure in the contract and so forth to make sure that he could give the team flexibility. He still has some gas in the tank, but he's got to go out and prove it. And he needs to be able to prove that he can stay healthy. So I think that there's question marks around Chris Snee, but the fact that they've brought him back in and they have confidence in him means that at least right now, week one, he's penciled in as the guy that's going to line up next to Pugh. A lot could happen during the course of training camp, and a lot could change, which is why you need to have guys right behind him that you know can step in. And you need to know that you can have a guy that can step in and play week in and week out and can play a majority of the season. You know, that was something that they were not necessarily prepared for last season, and that was something even John Mara voiced. One of the one things he said in the postseason press conference was, we anticipated the offensive line was going to be a little bit stronger than it was. And I'm paraphrasing. That wasn't the exact words, but they thought, you know what, with what we've got, we'll be okay. It turned out that that wasn't necessarily the case. Let's head back to the lines, and let's go to Roland in Fresh Meadows. Roland, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Good, bro. Good. I just wanted to say a few things. One, I heard yesterday that Eli Manning is throwing to Cruz and Mario Manningham at Duke.
Correct. That is correct.
And I don't want no part of Holmes for the reasons in which you said off the field issues in terms of being a bad teammate. Finley's supposed to have another checkup to see if he can get clear with medical reasons. I think April 25th. Right.
Well, that is one of the things that's standing in the way of Finley, and it's funny that you just mentioned that because we have David Goodman on Twitter and Billy Hollenbach also mentioning that Finley right now can't be picked up because he still has yet to get medical clearance. So you all are thinking right at the same time the same info. So I appreciate you passing that on.
Okay, I think I also believe that we're going to be more of a running team at the beginning because we have so many new pieces to go passing at the beginning. I think it's going to be difficult. And getting the tight end from Seattle, I think you kind of, you know, reinforces that thought in terms of we're going to come out running. And thank God we have an extra preseason game where we're going to be able to implement, you know, our game plan. But I think by the time midseason comes, I think you're going to see more of an open game. The reason I really call Lance is Dan made a nice article the other day. You wanted me to shake it up. Here comes a shake-up.
Uh-oh.
Don't go, Giant fans. He mentioned if you had a choice between Anthony Barr or Justin Gilbert, who would you pick? My pick being that we're going to be losing a lot of guys next year, and most of the things that I'm thinking about, the guys that we're coming in into this secondary, for me it's an audition. You know, who's going to practice? Who's going to compete? When it's all, you know, shaped out, who are we going to be able to hold? Plus, who we might be able to replace Prince Omokamora if we want to, you know, save money. Because we just spend a lot of money on DRC. And if any indication like we did last year in terms of we signed Victor Cruz, then we couldn't afford Hakeem Nicks. Now we signed DRC. Who's going to play the opposite side? Who can we get on the cheap when you consider that at 12 you might be able to get a rookie who can maybe not this year but next year be able to step in and you have a competitive corners where your number one would be DRC while Justin Gilbert would compete and you still be on the upside. And another gentleman called 2 weeks ago and he hinted on Ha-Ha Clinton from Alabama. Because we're going to lose Stevie Brown, maybe Antro Roll, and I think Hill's contract is up. What do you think, bro?
Well, in terms of drafting a corner, Justin Gilbert to me is one of the best corners out on the market. But I think what you're doing is you're assuming, and tell me if I'm misinterpreting here, you know, right now on paper between Prince and DRC, I mean, I think you got two guys on the outside that you should be comfortable with. You know, I don't think there's the urgency. I understand Prince's rookie contract's playing out and you want to have insurance, but at least right now, you have two guys with confidence that you could line up on the outside, and you have some options in that slot position, a guy like Walter Thurmond, who did a great job for Seattle. So in terms of if Gilbert's there at 12, I think you do need to give it consideration because he could be the guy that could slide in and take over in the event that Prince gets money elsewhere and you can't necessarily lock him up long term. I could live with that philosophy in terms of what you're laying out. I think it really depends on what happens with respect to those early draft picks. I wouldn't reach for a corner, I'll tell you that, though.
Meaning
if Gilbert's not there, I wouldn't say, oh, well, Prince may leave, so we need another corner. That I would not do.
No, I won't reach. You know, I won't reach at all. We're situated so good right now that we're going to do exactly what Jerry Reese says all the time: the best available athlete. I just wanted to shake it up, and I was also thinking, really, the way Reese always thinks is like 1 year ahead, and you're wondering at that particular time when you're making the draft, why are we getting this guy? We don't need him. Look at all the stuff that we have back there, and then next year you realize, oh, I see why. We needed him for this reason, because we couldn't afford to re-sign Prince Omokamara. We couldn't re-sign all the other guys who were considering re-signing. Plus, you know, Antro Roll, you know, we're going to have to consider what we're going to do with him. Plus, he's on the other side of 30, but he's fit. I mean, I would extend his contract. What they were talking yesterday, Lance, and I don't know if you heard it or not, they were talking about re-extending Eli Manning's contract. What I heard early in the season was that his agent wanted 6 years, and the Giant wanted to give him two. And I think it was just falling in place, just what John Schmuck was saying. We're going to go somewhere between 3 and 4. And I was thinking, I will go there, but I really like to see what this guy, the quarterback.
Nassib, you're talking about.
Yeah, I got to see something. I got to see something because they're talking that if he had came out this year, he would have been the number one quarterback.
Well, because there's not a great deal of depth at the position. That's why.
But he must also have the tools to play with. And I just want to see how he commands the the huddle, and I want to see if he's able to, you know, complete and if he has any success. Do we have the right guy? Are we developing the right guy? Or do we have to go out and find somebody else now, more now than later, because, you know, Eli is getting long in the tooth. And, you know, we'd be blessed if he can get up to 38, you know, providing he don't take a beating like he did last year.
You know? Correct. But you still need to be careful in terms of maybe drafting another quarterback or investing in a young guy, because keep in mind, even when Manning is ready to hang it up, these guys are going to play out their rookie contracts, and by then, you may not even re-sign them, and they may go elsewhere. So, you know, you could draft another promising quarterback, but Eli Manning, you're assuming, is still going to be the quarterback 4 years from now, and then that rookie deal is going to expire anyway.
Yeah, but Lance, even if you sign him for the second contract, he's not going to be able to make the kind of money that, you know, the big stars are going to make. He's not going to make nowhere near the 20s. You know, he'll probably cost you maybe $3 to $4 million a year, but he already knows your system. You already spent 4 years of developing a quarterback. He's not going to cost you that much, even when you're thinking about re-signing him. If he has the tools to be, you know, a starting quarterback. Thank you for taking my call, bro.
Sounds good, Roland. Appreciate the phone call. And one of the most telling things with respect to Nassib this year will be whether or not he can win the backup job. I mean, he didn't even win the backup job this past year. That's why they had Curtis Painter. And Curtis Painter was re-signed. If Nassib can't win the backup job, you know, what does that say about his development? The fact that there's some new voices on the coaching staff, you know, he's going to get new voices in his ear, and maybe that will help his development. And I think it's important that they develop a quarterback, but I'm not seeing the urgency factor. I understand Eli Manning's not coming off his greatest season, but there's stability at that position. It's not as if tomorrow they need the guy that's going to take over for Eli. I just don't see it that way. I agree with Roland, though. Jerry Reese does have a track record of thinking about the next offseason. And the perfect example is you draft Jonathan Hankins because you're thinking Linville Joseph may leave. And now you don't necessarily need a defensive tackle because you know you've got a starter in Jonathan Hankins. They did the same thing when they drafted Linville Joseph when they lost Barry Cofield. So there is that plan in place, and you'd like to see them anticipate that and do that for other positions. Sometimes you don't have the luxury to do that, but that they have done a very good job in. So if you want to do that for corner, that's fine. They're not in the position where they need to worry about bringing in another young quarterback. Let's see what happens with Nassib. And then down the road, as Eli ages and Nassib may not be the answer, then you can start to experiment. All right, let's try to squeeze in another caller or two. We've got Anthony in Phoenix. Anthony, what's happening?
Hi, Lance. First and foremost, welcome back to the show. We miss you, guy.
Appreciate that, Anthony. Good to be back. So what's happening with you?
Yeah,
what you got?
Don't be such a stranger.
I won't. I promise I won't. Well, listen, before you know it, the season's going to be back up and running, and I'll be back to my normal slot. So don't be too concerned from that regard.
Listen, I need you to hear me out here. Our offensive line, we've been going around and around about this, but if you think about it seriously, Snee is a question mark. J.D. Walton is a question mark. Beattie is a question mark. Swartz will be solid. Pugh is solid. Jerry can fill in. We need to get an offensive lineman at the 12. Now, if Robinson drops to us or Matthews happens to drop, oh, God, that's wonderful. But everybody's thinking Luan. Now, if Luan is there, we need to take him. Or if we could trade back with the Jets, and the Jets looking for a cornerback, and we could get Martin at that spot instead of the 12, or even Yankee at that spot, which I think would be more probable, but Martin should be available also. If we can get Yankee or Martin at that spot, at the Jets spot, 18, we should be fine. And then we can get Nicholas, because I'm a big fan of Nicholas. I just love Nicholas. I like Luan too, but I could live with Martin. I'm siding with Paul D right here. Martin, he likes Martin as well and likes Nicholas. I love Nicholas. I think Nicholas is such a beast. If you look at the film of Nicholas, oh, they can't bring him down. He blocks, pass protects, he catches the ball. I mean, what more do we want? We're getting Mark Bavaro in a newer model.
Well, I would be perfectly comfortable grabbing Nicholas as long as you're not grabbing him in the first round, and I think you could get him in a later round. So that, to me, makes sense. And in terms of an offensive lineman, you know, you threw out Luand in terms of Michigan. You know, he, I think, is an attractive option. There's been some off-the-field issues which have raised some red flags and concerns. I don't think that that's necessarily going to scare away some teams. He's right behind the Matthews and the Robinsons of the world. And, you know, Martin, to me, is also a player that would make sense for the Giants if they get in a position where they could grab him. You know, all of the things that you just laid out, I could certainly live with for the Giants' perspective.
Yeah, see, the thing is, we need to solidify that offensive line so we can run the ball again. I mean, we didn't bring Jennings in here for nothing. We want him to run the ball again, and that's Coughlin. Coughlin wants to run the ball. He wants to run the ball and then use the tight end once again. You could actually see where they're going here. It's either going to be a tight end and then an offensive line, or offensive line and a tight end, and throw in a running back and a wide receiver in the later rounds. You could just see where they're trying to fill in. They put all these other players in the backup spots that they picked up so that he can play this game. And somewhere along the line, Jerry Reese is going to either pick him up at the draft or find somebody that hasn't been in June, find somebody that he can buy at a bargain, like he did last year with Beeson.
Well, they definitely want to get back to that physical nature of football. I'll agree with you there, and I think the offensive line is the way you go about doing that, and you're right. They did not bring in Rashad Jennings so that they can just throw him out there and he could look pretty. You're right. They brought him in so that he could do some damage, and the only way he's going to be able to do that is if the offensive line gains some holes for him. So they addressed some of their needs during the offseason, but as you touched on in some of our previous callers, some of these guys are veterans. Some of these guys have injury concerns. And if you get to 12 and there's an attractive offensive lineman out there who is that top three guy, you can't necessarily hesitate if he's there. You've got to grab him because it's very hard in this day and age, specifically free agency, to go out and buy a left tackle or buy a right tackle. So you've got to draft them young so they're on the rookie pay scale. That's the best way to go about that.
Sure, especially with all these question marks that we have. And you can obviously, you know, move Pugh around a little bit. He can play inside or he can play outside. And they're even questioning that he might be a backup center somewhere along the line.
Well, I could see that, but I wouldn't have the urgency or the itch to move him around considering he came off such a productive rookie year and he's comfortable at right tackle, Anthony. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, well, we envision him here, we envision him there. Let's see what he could do at right tackle. And let's get stability there before you start saying to yourself, oh, let's move him around.
Yeah, and Schwartz, too, has the ability to move around.
Correct. He does have some versatility, play tackle and guard. That is correct.
That's why they draft. That's why they sign these players.
Well, they've always had those type of guys, Anthony. I mean, look at Kevin Booth. The reason why they kept Kevin Booth around, and I know the Raiders threw a lot of money, because Booth could play multiple positions. That's an extremely valued spot. If you have a guy that you could slide in and he's comfortable, you have to have that type of player on your roster.
That's exactly why I like Luan at 12 and then Nicholas at 43. So there we go. And nice to have you back, Lance. Hope to see you back again real soon, okay?
Sounds good, Anthony. Great talking with you. And a lot of good points that Anthony brought up. Let's close out the show with our final caller. And we go to Mike in Virginia. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Doing well, Mike. What you got?
Well, I've been thinking, I'm a big Eric Ebron fan. But I'm also like a old-fashioned Giants fan. I like the run game. I like the standard tight end that can catch the ball and block. But I do not know this McAdoo system. And I know that he had two fullbacks last year. Is there any way you think that we could get away with getting a guy like Ebron and using two fullbacks instead of a run-blocking tight end?
Well, Bear Pascoe's been a guy that they've used in the past who can play multiple positions. I don't know necessarily if that's the direction they want to go in. They've had, you know, a group of fullbacks that they've used in the past, so they can certainly perhaps head in that direction. You know, the Green Bay Packers, if you recall, relied heavily on John Kuhn. You know, he was a guy that could be a running back, a fullback, he could block, he could carry, so that gave them a lot of versatility. In terms of maybe the Giants, you know, toying with the idea of a Heinoski and a John Connor, it's possible. I think it really is going to come down to the roster, remember. If somebody gets hurt in training camp, keep in mind, Mike, you may not have the luxury to keep multiple fullbacks on your roster. So if they are allowed to do that, I could definitely see that playing out. But if they can't, you know, I don't know of many teams that keep two fullbacks around just because, hey, you may want to experiment here or there throughout the course of the season.
That's true. They're both very good fullbacks, so we're blessed to have both of them.
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, you could always give Einoski a carry once in a while, and he can maybe catch the football out of the backfield, too. It wouldn't be my first option, but he does have those intangibles that you don't see in everyday fullbacks.
I wanted to say one last thing about the offensive line. I think the offensive line is one of the heaviest chemistry-driven units on the field, and I think that not necessarily throwing huge names in the offensive line is the best idea. I think we keep some of the guys that we have, and we keep strong guys behind them, and then the even the backups, just guys that have a lot of NFL experience behind them, in case one of those guys do go down, because they said that we do have a lot of question marks, but we do have veterans behind them that are ready to back them up. And I remember when we went to the Super Bowl in 2000, we signed, I think, Dusty Ziegler and Dave Brown or something like that. These just big veteran guys. They weren't huge names, but they were the guys that could fold into the unit and play well with the other guys.
Well, and I think that they went in that direction this offseason in terms of bringing in veterans and not saying to themselves, hey, we're going to have our five starters and then we're just going to back up everything through the draft. I don't think Jerry Reese wanted to follow that script because the previous draft picks haven't necessarily panned out to be reliable weapons. So I don't think that even if they draft a handful of guys, we're all of a sudden going to see them turn to the rookies and say, hey, you guys are going to be the first guys up. They're going to have to prove themselves. They're going to rely on the John Jerrys of the world to provide that additional insurance, assuming they can hold up and stay healthy. So in an ideal world, the way you want to build your roster, Mike, you want to have that balance. You want to have veteran presence, and you also want to have some youth so that you're preparing for seasons moving forward. Because remember, when you put your roster together this year, you can't just say we're thinking about 2014. They're also thinking about 2015, 16, and down the road. And the way you do that is you develop young players.
Exactly. I want to give Jerry Reese one shout-out real quick for doing an awesome job in the offseason. I mean, there's no huge cap number. All these 14 free agents we signed, they call it like a spending spree. But look at these cap numbers. It's ridiculous. The contracts these guys are signing, they're small contracts. It's great. But enjoy listening. You guys have a great day.
Thanks for the phone call, Mike. Appreciate it. You're right. They've been very aggressive this offseason, but financially responsible. I think that's the best way to describe it. You know, they went out, they made some splashes, but it's not as if they said, oh, well, we need a corner. Let's just grab the most popular corner and throw $10 million his way. They didn't do that. And a lot of guys got big contracts. For those of you who followed NFL free agency, and some deservingly so, but some you say, wow, that's a lot of money. You know, Jarris Byrd, look at what he got from the Saints, $9 million a year. Is one position, one guy going to put them over the top? You know, I always sort of cringe a little when you're talking about $9, $10 million a year for one player. We know the NFL is the true definition of a team sport. That goes without saying. I will try to address as many tweets as possible while we're off the air. I'm back Friday as well, so we will continue the conversation. I will be back here mañana, 9:30 a.m. Eastern, and we'll continue to take your tweets, continue to take your phone calls. Always good interacting with Giants fans. Always good hearing from all of you. I have to say I'm a little disappointed. Before I leave you here, two thoughts. Number one, did not hear from Len in Maryland. So if Len listens to the archive, very disappointed. Hopefully we'll hear from Len on Friday. And for those of you who have been following the show consistently, and I know, and I've gotten tweets about this, I know all of you, you were dying, you were itching for Ann and DC to call in based on the history that the two of us have had between one another. So for those of you who know the influence and power of social media, work your magic. Listen, I'm not shying away. I'm not hiding. I will be here Friday, 9:30 a.m. Eastern. If Ann wants to give us a phone call, she wants to use a different alias, I'm not running away. I'm here. We want to play games. We want to have fun. I'm all for that. I'll leave it at that. Great stuff as always. We will continue the conversation on Friday. Lance Meadow signing off here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. You can follow and interact with me on Twitter, @LanceMeadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We'll hear from you tomorrow. Have a good one.